Yeah, coming up tonight on Melvin Law Monday, it's Florida Georgia week, and you're saying, give me some good news. Not too much good news out there. Well, I got some good news for you. I'm going to tell you about it in just a minute. Right around the corner in the Orange and Blue Room is Shane Matthews. He's going to share this with me. And then after that, Chris Storing joins the show. And then it's Monday, so that means it'll be time for Franz Beard, the Iron Duke. Stay tuned. The Buddy Martin Show is on the air. Tell your friends and neighbors.
Yes, it's time again for Buddy Martin. Call him up and tell him what you're thinking. But be kind because he's doing the best he can.
Better. Stronger. Faster.
Mama says that alligators are ornery because they got all them teeth but no toothbrush.
Hey, what if the voice calls while you're gone?
Take a message.
Bye.
You ready, champ?
I'm ready for this my whole life.
I'm incapable of small talk. But that's why you love me, right?
Kind of intimidating to be in the presence of so many great athletes.
Joining the band, of course. Since Melvin Law is the official law firm partner of the Florida Gators, I want to help.
Dad, we're litigators. Let's stick to helping people in the courtroom.
Well, can we still hang out and jam a little bit? At Melvin Law, we won't back down.
All right, Melvin Law, a little later we're going to have Jeffrey back talking a good story about Tom Petty. Right now it's time to go to the green room. One of the hardest working men in show business these days. The guy you see here everywhere, including his show, which will be tomorrow morning, Pot Up with Matthews. Good evening, Shane. life treating you all right?
Yeah, no complaints.
Nope. Well, it's here, and I've been waiting to ask you about this because sometimes I forget you're not a talk show host. You're a guy who played the game. And you're doing a good job on your show. But I thought, I'm going to ask Shane what it's like, really like, your gut and other parts of your body when you walk on that field and you're playing the Georgia Bulldogs. Now, this is even bigger because Florida's a 22.5-point underdog and Georgia's the number one team in the nation. You guys were quite successful against Georgia. Maybe you didn't have the same feeling. But what's that like playing in that game, Shane?
Well, buddy, not growing up around it, it took me a while to understand it. You know, I think if you grow up in the state of Florida, the state of Georgia, you understand what it all means. You know, I know what the Egg Bowl is all about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people here in the state of Florida don't know what the Egg Bowl is all about. So it's very similar. But as you said, yeah, I was 3-0 against them. You know, Coach Spurrier only lost once. I think between Coach Spurrier and Urban, what were they like?
16-2.
16-2. So somebody texted my show this morning and said, I guess I now know how it felt to be a Georgia fan in the 90s.
Hmm.
It's growing pains, and they're very, very good. Kirby's built maybe the best program in America right now.
Mm-hmm.
And but it'll be a great atmosphere regardless. People show up, and crazy things happen in this game at times.
Yeah. We'll talk more about that right now. The big news, you and I being recruiting experts that we are, big tonight, apparently. 4-star interior lineman, offensive lineman, Roderick Kearney has flipped from Florida State to Florida. He's 6'4", 285 from Orange Park, had been committed to the Seminoles since June, ranked as a number 70, top 70 player, and it goes to a top 10 class. And I'm reading what Rivals says about him. And again, I have to defer to people who know these things. Shane, he says, this guy wrote for Rivals. I wish I had his name. Gators are getting a beast in the box in Kearney and a versatile player. Kearney lines up at guard and tackle. for his Orange Park High School team. He has the size and strength to contribute early at Florida as interior lineman. Adding Kearney to the class addresses a need on the roster in the hole of the recruiting hall with only, I can't pronounce this guy's name, Najia Harris, I guess that's where he is, and Bryce Lovett Gutter. So I guess that's big news for the Gators in a week when they could use a little good news.
Yeah, the recruiting class is going to be outstanding when it's all said and done. So, you know, we'll see. Doesn't really help us right now, but anytime, you know, Billy, like I said, they're going to have a really good class. I think they'll hit the portal real hard. So we'll have to wait and see what happens next week. I mean, next year, I should say.
Yeah. We'll discuss this before you go and about how this year looks. I've been thinking a lot about this, and as devastating as it may sound, and you said this last week, I think, if they have to take their medicine with six wins, if that's what it is, and get to a bowl and get the time in and keep that recruiting class, they're probably going to be all right. We have to remember that they're playing one of the juggernauts of college football. And as I said today, talking to my friend Lauren Smith from Georgia, who will be on this program Wednesday, we're looking at a juggernaut and a dynasty right now. It's not a good matchup for Florida, especially on third downs. It would take, don't say a miracle, but dead gum near it for Florida to win that game. 22.5-point underdog, Shane.
Yeah, I mean, they're a better football team on paper. You know, I said today, we probably have one guy that could start for them, Osiris Torrance. Other than that, they're better than us at every position. So, look, it is what it is. It's, like I said, we dominated them in the 90s. They have the upper hand right now. And you have to, as much as you hate to say it, you got to give Kirby credit. Now, Kirby took over a program 5 or 6 years ago, however long it's been.
Mm-hmm.
A team that had been winning 8 or 9 games.
Yeah, Mark Richt was successful and had some good players.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, but he's got it going. And they've been in the top 5 in recruiting the last 4 or 5 years, and it's paying off.
Yeah, like I said, Lauren Smith, he just finished a book called Elite, Kirby's book on the season. It won't be out until next spring. So, you know, people don't understand we don't follow recruiting. They're always asking questions like Scott Sloan wants you to know, tell him about, what do you say? So why he says, Scott Sloan, oh, hold on. Ask a question. Shane, what else are our biggest areas of need going into 2023? Well, now, if you've heard Shane at all, you know what he talks about, the front seven. And but yeah. you go answer his question, will you?
Well, yeah, I said back in May, maybe before that, maybe during the spring practices, we don't have front seven SEC caliber. Mm-hmm. And that's been the biggest issue on defense. Safeties haven't played great either, but it's the front seven. And that's the biggest target. If you look at the recruiting class, there's multiple defensive linemen. I wouldn't be surprised if they go grab some in the portal as well. And you look at Tennessee and Ole Miss, and there's one other team that's having a really good year that they have over 20 something transfers from the portal on their team. So, you know, but the biggest need is defensive line and linebackers.
Yeah, so Shane, some interesting things have happened in the last couple of weeks. All of a sudden, we got huge games on the 4th of November in a couple of weeks. Whoever knew they would be this big? Certainly, we knew Tennessee and Georgia might be. But now we got Alabama, LSU. I'm telling you what, LSU's playing as good as anybody. If you watched that game the other day, and I did, they stuck it to Ole Miss. Ole Miss couldn't stop them. And they one-handedly. So these two games are really going to shape what's going on. And LSU is going to be a factor. If they don't win it, they're going to – what if they beat Alabama? You know, it could happen. They're that good, I think.
They're good. I don't think they can – I don't know where the game – where's the game being played?
I've got it here somewhere. I'll tell you this.
Look, Alabama, people can say what they want to say. Kudos to Tennessee for beating them. But think about this, buddy. Alabama had 17 penalties in that game. Didn't play great. Had a couple of turnovers on special teams.
Mm-hmm.
Had a field goal to win the game. Yeah. People forget that. As bad as they play, they're still a dominant team. And anytime you got Bryce Young, he is the calmest, coolest, collected quarterback I think I've ever watched play football.
Really?
Yes. It's like he's out playing in the park with his buddies. Nothing phases this kid. Looks like he's playing in slow motion. But LSU is playing real well due to their quarterback. Jaden Daniels played outstanding last 2 weeks.
Was he good or what? I mean, he looked
great. I think he's thrown seven and run for seven in the last 2 weeks. And, yeah. That helps.
That game, by the way, is at Baton Rouge. And so the same weekend that Tennessee plays at Georgia in Athens, I'm telling you, I'm really high on Tennessee and really high on LSU. I mean, I give them a shot here. Both those teams a shot.
Yeah, I think Georgia will win because it's in Athens. And Georgia, they'll learn from that tape against Alabama. I still think Georgia's a better football team because they're much, much better. Tennessee's defense is not very good. They can outscore you, but we'll see. I mean, it's, you know, a lot of people think that Georgia may overlook Florida. I don't see that happening.
No, it's not happening. No. All right, so Shane, you hear me okay?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Looking ahead to the best teams in the country, the Final Four. So do you agree with this, that it's going to be the SEC champion, right, will be in, and if it will be probably Tennessee or Georgia, another spot, if they don't win the SEC. You think Alabama, it could be Alabama, maybe Alabama will win it, but I'm just saying it'll be among the two of those three teams will be in there, right? I do believe. And then you have the Ohio State-Michigan winner. And then I guess Clemson. Those are the four I would pick. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't think anybody will beat Clemson now that they survived Syracuse. I still think Georgia and Alabama will make it.
What if Georgia loses to
Tennessee's going to have one. I think Tennessee's going to lose to Georgia.
Okay.
What will the committee do with Tennessee sitting with one loss? But you're going to have an undefeated Clemson team, and you're going to have an undefeated Big Ten team.
Right.
So I think they may get left out.
Yeah. Well, the
only hope would be for
Georgia to lose to Alabama.
Georgia would, but then Georgia will only have one loss. They would need Georgia to beat Alabama.
Right.
That way Alabama would be knocked out.
Well, if Georgia, yeah, right, that would be true. They'd have a shot there. All right, so that'll be interesting to see how it plays out. Here's a stat for you. I thought about you today. One way you rank teams, there's six undefeated teams, right, is their caliber opposition they've beaten, right? Okay, now we know who the six teams are who are unbeaten. Georgia, Tennessee, Clemson, TCU, Ohio State, and Michigan, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Out of those teams, which team do you think their opponents have the best winning record?
It's not Ohio State, and it's not Michigan. It's not Clemson. It's probably TCU.
Bingo, you got it. You won the cigar. TCU, 58% their teams. Georgia's second at 56.9. Tennessee third at 566. Clemson fourth at 560. Then Ohio State and Michigan dropped way down in the 481. Whatever. So those four teams. So I've kind of changed. Clemson had their hands full with Syracuse. You watching that game on Saturday?
I didn't see. I saw some of the highlights, yeah, but I didn't see the whole game.
Yeah, they had a struggle to get back to win that game, but they did win it. And they're not without talent. All right, Florida, Georgia. This statement came out today, joint statement, okay? Which, what do you think it means from both schools? We will consider of all, this is about the future of Florida in Florida, Georgia, in Jacksonville. We'll consider a multitude of factors, including tradition, finances, future SEC scheduling models with the addition of Texas and Oklahoma, and what's the best for both schools' football programs overall. What do you make of that?
I make of that that this Jacksonville is going to be out in a few years. It's going to be home and home.
They got two more.
Yeah. I mean, because neither, that's a joint statement, and they're not saying they're going to keep it in Jacksonville. So I just think it's going to end up going Athens and Gainesville, and we just got to deal with it as much as we don't like it.
Well, I mean, it's Georgia. Florida's happy with it in Jacksonville.
I will say this. If they do that, it needs to be Gainesville, Athens. We're not going to do this every now and then.
Well, that would be. That's the only way Florida's going to do it is to have Gainesville, Athens. But the Jacksonville people are going to feel betrayed, that's for sure. So now Jacksonville becomes officially a pro football town. There you go. That's what happens. So today in the interview he had with the media, I don't know if you heard it or not, they talked to to Anthony Richardson about the game and being an underdog by 22.5 points. And they were trying to obviously get him riled up about it and the media. And they said, could that permeate through the team or you through you as a leader, 22.5 points? He said, 22 points? I didn't even hear about that till now. We haven't really been thinking about the underdog because we're pretty much underdog all season. A lot of people have been counting us out, doubting us, but just comes with the territory. We know what we have to do to get back on top. We're going to try that. We're not necessarily thinking about being the underdog. That's probably true because they're the underdog all the time. But will that have any impact on the way this team plays, being a 22.5 point underdog?
I don't think so.
Didn't fire you up when you were underdog like that?
I don't know if we were underdog very often. But, you know, I mean, we just go out and play. But, buddy, the bottom line is we felt like we could beat everybody we played.
True.
We just ain't – we are who we said we were back in May, you know?
Yeah.
As much as it pains me to say that, it's just where we are. It's reality.
Let's talk about the rest of the league here. All of a sudden,
South Carolina is a bad football team. Well, buddy. They beat won the other night, but they're a bad team. They should not be ranked. They've beaten three teams that I don't even know if they're FBS. I know Georgia State is, but kudos to them. They're scoring multiple ways, but that was two bad football teams playing each other the other night, and we got to find a way to beat at least one of them.
Well, you said it, and I was going to say you think South Carolina's bad. What does that make Texas A&M?
Well, Texas A&M has dudes now.
They ain't producing.
Well, their defense is very good. Mm-hmm. Offensively, they are so challenged at the quarterback position.
They got the quarterback whisperer. What do you mean?
Well, they're challenged, and they have the fastest human being that plays college football on their team. And they can't get him the ball in space. I would line him up at wide receiver or in the slot, throw him a bubble, do whatever to get him in space. But it's fun. It's great to see Texas A&M struggle. But they still got some players now.
Here's a question from David Hunter. You can probably see it on the screen. He wants to know. I'll read it to you. I can make it a little bigger, but not much. Hold on a second.
It's just in being in white, it was hard to read.
Yeah. I know this is a Gator show, but ask Shane, if A&M loses this week to Ole Miss and falls to 3-5, well, they didn't. They played it last week. Are they going to oust Jimbo? Of course not. Okay, he's $85 million buyout. Why would you oust him? David, I'm answering for you. And Ole Miss surprised me. They sort of didn't come back after the halftime.
They're like all these other teams that there's five or six good teams in America. Everybody else is the same. Mm-hmm. Kentucky had no business being a top 10 team when they were ranked up there. Ole Miss definitely didn't. I think Texas A&M will beat Ole Miss, quite honestly. I thought LSU would beat Ole Miss. Ole Miss's defense is not very good. If you can slow down their running attack, you'll win the game.
Gators kick off at noon against the Aggies, College Station. Never good. Your thoughts about that?
Oh, that's a good time to play them. You don't want to be playing them at night.
Noon well, games are good. I really meant for both teams. But anyway, I don't like those noon games. But, yeah, I mean, Florida can't beat Texas A&M. But
that's just 11 o'clock game there.
Yes, that's true. It is. Yeah.
A&M is pretty damn good on defense.
Well, it hadn't reflected in the record. So, all right, so here's the deal. This is that famous stat for A&M. Kevin Sumlin and Jimbo Fisher threw 55 games. Kevin Sumlin was 39-16 and got fired. Jimbo Fisher is 37-18.
Yep, and Jimbo, I'm a firm believer of this, and you'll never convince me otherwise. He hasn't had a quarterback that's consistent. And if he don't find one, he ain't never going to win.
I agree. Yeah, I'm sorry I said today, but they didn't play. You're right. I got my days mixed up. Sorry. Yeah, isn't it about the quarterback? Everything. Look,
it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what level of football you coach or follow.
Right.
If your quarterback is not consistent, you are not winning the game.
Exactly. And by the way, I wrote my notes today talking about the future. The team that is going to be there in the end is a team that has an upright quarterback, a good one. You know, because these guys can get hurt easily.
Yeah, I don't know. I think everybody's healthy now, though, in the league.
Now.
Yeah.
But this is when you get down to some blood and guts, hard-nosed black and blue football coming up.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's the best teams in the league have really good quarterbacks.
Yeah. Exactly. So, all right. So, I heard the press conference today. I listened closely to Billy. Tried to assess it from just a distance. And he's saying the same things he said before, because what else can he say? You know, he doesn't have any answers he can provide to the media. And if he had them, he probably wouldn't tell the media anyway. But I got the feeling that maybe people are thinking, you know, this is the same thing he said last week. And when you lose and you talk about your deficiencies and they're the same thing every week, you kind of think, well, who's in charge and who's the coach? Do you think Gator fans will tire of that?
I mean, I think he's being honest. I don't know what the Gator fans – like, again, buddy, it goes back to – I can't remember what you predicted this team to be, but I said if he won seven games, he should be up for coach of the year in the conference. Now, nobody's ever going to get the coach of the year for winning seven games, but I'm telling you that is how bad the roster was when he took over.
Well, Shane, you have to remember, I remembered yours. We agreed on the fact that that there would be a 7-win would be a good year and 8 would be a great year. Mm-hmm. So I think you can probably take 8 out of there right now.
But, right. But my point to the whole thing is I don't know what the fans were expecting and what they're going to expect after a bye week. You're not going to flip a switch and become a good football team. I mean, here's the thing. Gator fans complained about what mostly last year? Not playing hard and a million penalties. Okay, the team plays very hard and the team is very penalized a very small portion of the time. So that's things that you can control as a coach with your football team. You can't control your talent level. That's just my opinion. Everybody has their own opinion. That's the great thing about Sports Talk Radio. Mm-hmm. You know, I had to play in a golf tournament this weekend, and I was playing actually with a doctor, And he was joking about how it's so funny how everybody questions a football coach, but do people question doctors? You know,
yeah.
I mean, you can question sometimes, but nobody's running down to the local hospital questioning how he put that ACL back together. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, but that's the great thing about sports talk radio. Everybody's got an opinion.
Yeah, opinions. That's what makes horse races. And of course, it's a thing that makes, as you say, sports talk radio. Yeah. All right. So tell me about the show tomorrow. You got some doofus on from this program, and who else?
Yeah, I got the good old Buddy Martin, and then we'll talk to Buck Ballou, quarterback, has his own show up in Atlanta. Get his perspective from the Dogs. You know, he and I argued last year about Stetson Bennett. He's not a fan of Stetson Bennett.
No.
And I told him, I was like, dude, you got a quarterback that can do it all, but he doesn't have a strong arm. Like, he don't need a strong arm. The dude can play. And he won him a national title.
Yeah, I was talking to Lauren Smith about him, about how much he's respected by the team. You know, and all he's done is everything he was asked to do. He's feisty. He never quits. He fights. Somehow it ain't always pretty, but he gets it done.
Well, he's accurate and he's faster. I mean, I saw him play, it was a couple of weeks ago. He went like 75 yards, just outran everybody in the damn building. I couldn't believe it. But he's a good player.
Yeah.
But people have the knock on him because he's small and wasn't highly recruited. But goes to show you, man, he knows how to – you can do the little things. You can win football games.
Yeah, Belichick was talking about his team learning how – what it takes to win, you know, learning it, look what it looks like. And that's the thing they have to continue to do to be better. So, all right, so before I let you go, what else are people asking you on your show? What are the – besides the obvious, the third downs?
Well, the people just – they talk to me about the defense. I'm like, look – your defense was not very good last year. I know we're dead last in third downs in America. It doesn't really matter whether you're in the middle of the pack or dead last. You are who you are. And we lost two players off last year's defense to the National Football League, Zach Carter, who I think was a fourth rounder, and Kyer Elam, who's a first rounder. You're not going to have anybody probably drafted really high off of this defense, because I don't think the corner, I don't think Jason Marshall Jr., is eligible to be drafted. You just got to go find players.
Yep.
But that's what everybody wants to talk to me is about defense.
Defense.
That's it.
You the, the defensive expert that you are.
But I just try to tell them, I was like, we were in position to stop people on those third downs against Missouri. Third downs against LSU, give Jaden Daniel credit because I didn't see – one person running wide open. If anybody finds somebody running wide open against LSU, please send it to me. We had really good coverage in that game. We could not pressure the quarterback. He made unbelievable throws. And LSU's probably got the best receiving core in the league.
Their personnel looks really good to me. Really good. So,
well, they got a first-round wideout.
Oh, boy, is he ever. He looks great. Shane, I'll talk to you in the morning. Good job, brother.
Hey, buddy.
Thank you very much.
Good night.
Appreciate it. All right. Standing by in the orange and blue room is Jeffrey. Well, first is Jeffrey Mellon. I got Jeffrey Mellon. Then we're going to hear let's do this. Let's put Jeffrey on hold for a second. Go right to the now orange and blue room and see the star of SEC Nation, the guy who dresses up like a clown sometimes. And he does whatever it takes in show business. Chris, right?
Yeah, I dress up as a clown because I'm a loyal Florida Gator that continues to wager on his team against LSU. And, you know, we talk a lot about beating Georgia. We got to figure out a way to beat LSU first and foremost.
I tell you what, I watching LSU this past week against Ole Miss, I realized that this is a good football team. Their personnel is really good.
It's a good football team that's inconsistent at times. They're starting to minimize some of those things that are the detrimental mistakes. You saw that first quarter, though. The first quarter, they give up 200 yards of offense. They commit three pass interference penalties on the same drive that extends an opportunity for Ole Miss to score a touchdown. They miss a couple opportunities in the red zone. miss a field goal, and then all of a sudden they get things on track. And I'll tell you the thing that they do the best. They stay ahead of the chains, and the third down conversions over the last couple of weeks, especially against us, I think, you know, you go back and look at Jaden Daniels. I want to say he was 8 of 9 on third down passing, converted 6 of those for first downs, 1 for a touchdown, and did basically the same thing on Saturday in the final three quarters against Ole Miss. He was moving the chains very well because they stay in third and short. The average third down conversion for him was 4.2 yards, which is a manageable down and distance to try to move the chains.
Are you liking your Tennessee team right now? You said the best team in the country, didn't you, the other day? Is that what you said?
I think they should be the number one team in the country. I don't know if they're the best team in the country. Number one because of the resume they have. I don't think there's anybody even close that has the same sort of resume building wins that they've had, starting with, you know, what they did along the way with Pitt, and then beating us and beating LSU in Baton Rouge, and then, you know, getting over that Alabama hurdle. So I think they definitely deserve if the college football playoff rankings came off today, they would be the number one team in the country.
Ryan Kelly's become a kind of a popular figure all of a sudden for a guy that got beat up a lot originally. Andy McIntosh says, ask Chris how tough it was to do the Brian Kelly segment with the clown outfit.
Well, it dates back to the first year that I lost the bet. We were doing an interview with Will Muschamp. I had to be dressed up as Mr. Peanut during a serious interview, and then doing the one with Brian Kelly. I didn't realize nobody gave him a heads up about it either, but he was asked at his press conference whether he knew I was going to be dressed up that way, and evidently he did not. But he was a good sport. I'll tell you this, and buddy, I think I told you in the offseason, I had this misconception of who Brian Kelly was based upon what I had seen on the sidelines over his years at Notre Dame. And getting a chance to meet him at spring meetings down in Destin and then SEC Media Days and subsequent interviews we've done with him, I like the guy. I think he's much warmer than what we probably see on television. He's got great command in terms of the presence when he's in the room. And he's actually got a pretty good sense of humor, too. So I've fond of him and certainly respect what he's doing with that roster that he inherited.
Do you think the landscape of the SEC is changing right before our eyes? Because next weekend, there's two huge games. LSU suddenly can't be taken for granted anymore. They could beat Alabama. They're good enough. And we know Tennessee, your Tennessee team, and Georgia, with Hooker playing like he is. What if Tennessee and LSU won this weekend?
I think it's funny, you probably would have a better gauge on this than I do, but like, I feel like everybody outside of Athens and Alabama and Tuscaloosa, you know, are kind of cheering for Tennessee. Even Florida fans, I mean, I think are taking some joy in seeing some new blood in the SEC do well. You know, I think it would be interesting to have LSU and Tennessee in Atlanta. I mean, it seems like it's been the same old matchups for a while now, even though that's probably not the case. But, you know, to see that the SEC has now developed, we were saying a second tier, but Tennessee's moved into that top tier. Ole Miss was there for a little bit. LSU's making a claim to be in that top tier. It's making it much more dramatic as we get into the late October, early November weeks. You know, it reminds me of the NFL. The NFL, you know, has been after parity for a long time. I think we're starting to see some parity in the SEC finally.
Your old head coach said the other day, told me, he says, look, people ask me about Tennessee. Why do I cheer for Tennessee? He says, I don't have a problem with Tennessee. I'm from Tennessee. And he says, I want to see them win when they don't play the Gators. So he's right out there with it. He admits it's what it is.
All right, don't forget, though, buddy, Josh Heupel also won the Steve Spurrier Coach of the Year.
That's right.
With down at South Carolina with Coach Beamer. So there is, he takes a little pride in that. And I think, I honestly believe that he sees a little bit of himself probably in what Josh Heupel's doing and, you know, kind of revolutionizing the way that the passing game is played and the splits they use and the tempo. Like, I think all of us, you know, find it to be really fun to kind of watch that offense. Those guys that I played with at Florida, it reminds me a lot, buddy, of, you know, the five wide receivers that they have. When Tillman comes back, that's going to be the best group of wide receivers maybe in the entire country. And it's just very reminiscent of the groups that we had at Florida where we'll put our best five out there, you put your best five cover guys, and we're going to find a matchup that we like.
I like that kind of football. By the way, who sponsored that the Coach of the Year thing, by the way?
That would be Chris Murray Morgan.
Oh, yeah. Good job. Yeah. It's Steve Spurrier's Brian Grill. All right, so a couple more for you. I'll let you get out of here. I know you got a long day. Let's talk about this Gator football team. I listened to the press conference today. Didn't go. Franz is there. He's standing by in the green room, orange and blue room. And I thought about Billy, and this is the danger of it. He's saying the same thing because the same thing is happening. And there's a sameness to his comments where I can hear people saying, yeah, you told us that last week. Why isn't it fixed, et cetera? You know how impatient Gator fans get. But they're looking at a tall order to go to win seven games this year right now. Where do you think they stand? How bad is the third down defense thing going to hurt them against Georgia? And what do they do?
Well, a couple things. First and foremost, I think what's happening in Baton Rouge is further maybe rubbing some salt in the wound here in Gainesville because of, you know, Brian Kelly taking over a roster that he largely didn't recruit and them kind of getting better as the year's gone on. I think Florida fans are a little frustrated maybe that you've seen such peaks and valleys and inconsistency with this team. But I think we knew in the preseason, buddy, this team was going to go as far as Anthony Richardson could take him. And he's had moments of looking like a Heisman Trophy winner and other moments where he's looked, you know, below average. So I for whatever reason, I kind of feel like he's due for a good game here in this one, especially because of how poorly he played in his first start last year. That maybe 2-minute meltdown before halftime last year has to be, you know, somewhat weighing on him. So I know he wants to probably get some retribution there. But I went back and watched defensively, buddy, the third downs. I talked about it on Friday night's show. Florida is historically bad on third down. And we're not talking about third and shorts. Throughout the entirety of the season, they're averaging opponents down a distance on third is third and 7.1. That is a very difficult yardage to try to convert, and they've done it at a 53% clip. So I watched today, this afternoon, I watched the LSU game, Florida's defense against LSU, against Missouri, against Tennessee, and against Utah on third downs. In a lot of cases, particularly that LSU game, they had decent calls on. It's just one guy busting.
Best assignment, yeah.
Yeah, Trey Dean, you know, supposed to be playing a half-field safety, letting Kayshawn Booty get behind him, or Venture Miller letting, you know, a tight end get across his face when he's supposed to be walling somebody out from the middle of the cover two defense. Mm-hmm. Like, when you play great team defense, everybody has to do their job. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing I love about football is one guy can mess up, and it's going to ruin the entire play. So, Florida's just got to find a way to get on the same page and try to play a little more sound with their technique and execution.
Final thing from Chris Doran. You see him on SEC Nation. And boy, you're on there a lot, aren't you? How many times do you do it now?
SEC Now? Yeah, we do.
SEC Now. I'm sorry. I guess so many of those I can't remember. But I know.
Yeah. I get Nation's it. The game day equivalent, the traveling show. But we do SEC This Morning. Peter Burns and I do it Friday mornings and Monday mornings from 8 to 11 on the SEC Network. And then SEC Now, our show is usually Friday night and then all day Saturday with the SEC football final finishing up at the end of the night.
And you see the replays too. So, yeah.
All night Saturday, all day Sunday morning.
Yeah. Good job. That show's getting to be really interesting. I like Tequio a lot, by the way. I think.
Hey, he's coming along, man. I like, you know how much I love Chiz, and I certainly miss him.
Yeah.
We got a new dynamic with Benjamin and Tequio, and I think we're starting to hit our stride a little bit, man.
Look at you, man, all over national TV. Well, good job. Congratulations. Give me a score, or at least you don't have to pick it, but give me what's going to happen in Jacksonville on Saturday.
You know what? What's the spread? 22.5, I think.
22.5.
I wouldn't be surprised to see Florida cover, and I know that's like a moral victory, but I think Florida will keep it close. And it's funny, buddy, talking to Benjamin Watson on set, you know, I mentioned, like, why are you nervous? You guys are going to kill us. And he's like, man, I've been burned by that too much. So it's almost like those guys had that PTSD like I had growing up watching Georgia beat Florida every year. So I don't know what will happen. I don't expect us to win, but I do think we can maybe keep it closer than what this point spread would indicate.
Say real quick, hi to Franz. We've come to this now, Franz. Can they cover? Not can they win.
All depends. I mean, my gosh, Will Muschamp handling that Georgia defense is, you know, that's almost criminal that they allow that to happen to college teams because, I mean, my gosh, they play four. They don't blitz. They play you straight up four people rushing and drop seven, and they don't sack the quarterback. They don't take the ball away, and yet nobody can move the ball on them. I don't know how Florida is going to get points on them. I'm going to be very honest with you. The question, and I don't know how Florida is going to stop them from getting points, but there's such a thing as Jacksonville weirdness. And strange things happen in Jacksonville. Anthony Lott, you were there. Time out. That's just one case of Jacksonville weirdness. Florida running the ball 60 times in 2014 for 418 yards, and 2 weeks later, Will Muschamp gets fired as Florida's head coach. That's Jacksonville weirdness. I mean, threw six passes in that game with Treon Harris at quarterback. You know, Buddy Martin could have completed three passes.
Now, wait a minute. I was a pretty good QB. Hold on a second. Don't be comparing me to Treon Harris.
You've got a couple years on Treon, buddy.
I still got it.
But, you know, Henry Davis in 1975, Henry Davis didn't give up a touchdown pass before the Georgia game, didn't give up one afterward. They run a tight end around Richard Appleby throwing to Gene Washington. Henry Davis has him blanketed, and he steps in a puddle in the old Gator Bowl and goes face first into the mud. Gene Washington catches a touchdown pass, 10-7.
Well,
there is such a thing as Jacksonville weirdness.
Yeah, and Chris has been part of that. He's got to go to work. I can let him go. But Jack, what was your weirdest moment in Jacksonville, Chris?
Man, you know, that 93 game that Franz was talking about there, the game plan the entire week, they played a lot of cover two. I was going to catch a lot of cover two posts and a lot of corner routes. And then all of a sudden, the sky opens up about 3 hours before the game. And I remember coming out in warm-ups. It was as black as night out there and rained so hard. We ran the ball with Eric Rett over and over again, but yet on the other side, Eric Zier threw the ball 63 times in the pouring rain and almost beat us there, despite the weather. But it was, as Franz mentioned, the timeout from Anthony Lott saved us for sure.
Greatest timeout call in Gator history.
Chris Doering, SEC Now, buddy. Keep it up. Good job. Thanks. Appreciate it. All right, Chris. Yeah, Franz, weirdness. We've been a part of that. We've seen a lot of that stuff over the years. I go back to
it's
this.
Phenomenal.
This is the weirdest one I can remember. Georgia had a little kicker named Bobby Etter. Remember that? Yeah. And yes, Florida was behind. Florida was leading the game by two, as I recall. Something like whatever it was. And the extra point was to be kicked, and he dropped the ball. And Bobby Etter picks it up and runs it in for 2 points, and Florida loses 11-10. I mean, that's just a kind of crazy stuff that goes on. So, all right, so listen, I'm going to ask you to – you're a music guy, right? you like Tom Petty, right?
Absolutely.
All right, I'm going to let Jeffrey tell his story. He's been trying to tell it since we started tonight about his story about Tom Petty, and then you can give us yours. We know about Hughes Supply and all that. Here's what –
Jeffrey was Tom Petty's
first
lawyer.
Yeah, exactly. Here you go. Welcome back, Jeffrey Meldon. Last time he was on, we talked about Tom Petty Weekend, which was a blast. Now we get to talk about Tom Petty. So important now with things, you know, how they have developed. Is this becoming an anthem, which has been now ballyhooed as a tradition around college football? I'm a little bit ticked off with the LSU band, what they did, though, playing in the middle of that. And you heard the fans boo, and that's almost sacrilegious, playing a band music like that during the middle of Won't Back Down.
Yeah, it definitely not something that we should tolerate.
I'm with you on that. All right, so speaking of Tom Petty, you knew him. You were his lawyer. Everybody's got Tom Petty stories. I don't have one. Franz Beard played Major League Football in Gainesville. Hughes Supply with him. He was one tackle, and Tom was the other one. You know him personally. Tell me your best Tom Petty story.
Well, I got to be friends with Tom when he was with Mudcrutch, and we did the first two Mudcrutch festivals. So when I opened up my law firm in 1971, Tom was one of my first clients. He said, yeah, let's see what we can do. Maybe you can help us develop our career. I went and found him a week-long gig at the Holiday Inn in Lake City.
Wow.
And I was very excited, but yeah. It was $600
wow.
For six nights, four sets a night. And
what a deal.
Yeah. This is 1971.
Oh, listen, I get you. Yeah, I get it.
It was probably the equivalent of maybe $3,000 or so. Anyhow, so the band goes there. They're playing at the Holiday Inn. And, you know, I get a call from the general manager there of the bar. And he says, Jeffrey, we like Tom. We like Mudcrutch. However, all they want to do is play their own music. And we want top 40. So I called Tom and the group in. I said, Tom, we got a complaint here about playing more top 40. What do you think? He said, don't worry about it, Jeffrey. I got a solution. So they went back the next night, and every time they wanted to play their own songs, they'd say to the crowd, and here's another top 40 hit named whatever, you know. And the manager was there, and the manager wouldn't know the song.
No, of course not.
He represented Antonio. But the point I would like to make is that Tom Petty was one of the most determined, focused young people I had ever run into. He was, 21, 22 at the time, and he was laser focused on success.
He didn't back down, Jeffrey. Well, there you go. That's a good little story from Jeffrey on that. That was a lot of money back then, you know, working that gig.
Goodness, I was making $125 a week as the assistant sports editor of the Savannah paper.
And you were an editor. Our band played. We had a group bluegrass band. And we played, the Dixie Bar, Dixie Grill, across the street from the old Forest Avenue, Boffins Coco. We played, our band, Pete Gallagher, played across there. We played $300 a weekend. So we played Friday and Saturday night, and we were thrilled to get it. We were not Tom Petty, obviously, but that was just getting paid was the gig. All right, so Francis, here we go. You got the news tonight. I'm assuming you'll be writing about it tomorrow. They flipped a really promising offensive lineman, Roderick Kearney. It was a four-star from Orange Park, 6'4", 285, from FSU.
300 pounds.
Okay, the number I got, whatever. I mean, I don't know how much he is. I don't know much about this guy. I'm just going by what they say online. I'll take your word, but he's apparently very versatile. Played guard and tackles from Orange Park. He's a pretty strong guy. And he fills up a hole in that recruiting class they need. They only got two offensive linemen, Harris and Lovett, committed. So what do you know about this?
He's 6'4", he's 300 pounds. He's going to play guard at the next level. Tremendous straight-ahead blocker, which is what you got to be as to play guard, and yet has good enough feet that he can get out and lead a sweep and things like that. Going to have some work on his pass protection, but tell me a true freshman that doesn't need that. It's one thing in high school when your opponent across the way maybe 225, 230 pounds and you're pass protecting. And instead, when you come into the SEC and the guy across from you is 300 pounds and he runs like a halfback for 20 yards. So he's going to have some work on there. But he's a big-time pickup. And he's the 22nd guy in this class, which I'm told they're going to sign 28. Which, again, gets us into the numbers crunch when you think about it, because they're going to they only have four seniors. So 28 in the recruiting class would be, 181 in that. So that's 109 players. And then if you take any transfers, it means there's a lot of guys that we see on this roster that won't be there next year. It's one of the sad realities of college football. And we got to understand something. These are one-year scholarships that they signed. They do not sign a four-year deal. Back when we were coming up and you were already established and I was young and coming up, back in the 60s and the 70s, scholarships were four-year deals. And now it's a one-year deal. And the transfer portal, throw that in there. And the one-year deal is actually a better situation for a kid who's going to transfer, who may be thinking of transferring because he's got a one-year deal. It's a lot easier. He just, boom, he's out of there and so forth like that. And I think they're going to have a good number of kids that are going to be leaving the program. My numbers say they got to have 35. So some of those guys are probably going to be some offensive linemen who don't play very much. And that's going to open the door for some more recruits, but it's also going to open the door for kids in the transfer portal. My belief is that he's going to sign 11, maybe 12 in the transfer portal. And I'd be surprised if they aren't focused in on guys in the transfer portal who are on both sides of the line of scrimmage.
Well, Flippin's been pretty good lately. DeJohn Mustard, I got him earlier from Ohio State, DeJohn Johnson, and now Kearney from FSU. So that's that fills a couple of big holes there. You were at the press conference today, friends. I heard your questions. I heard some comments. I listened to Billy, and I tried to be objective about it. I don't know what else he can say. He was asked about some pretty rough questions. I've got a couple of them cut here, but his audio is so low you can't even hear it. But talk about what you heard. And you might, a critic, and I'm a big Billy Napier fan, and so are you, might say he says everything's correctable, but it's not getting corrected. The next week he didn't have any reasons. That's what a critic might say. What do you say to that?
Well, he's saying what he's got to say. He's not going to trash his kids. He may know that he's going to have a bunch of them that aren't going to be with him next year. He knows that already. But he's not going to sit there and say, yeah, old Billy Bob here can't block a lick, can't run the ball, can't catch it, can't do anything. He's not going to say that. So, yeah, you're going to wind up saying what sounds like the same thing over and over again. But he did have he did say something today. I'm trying to find the quote right here. There at the end here that kind of lets you know that he's looking for beyond this year. And he basically said, look, we're going to be, you know, he was asked about, well, you've done this before, you know, you've had to deal with a team before that you've had to kind of change courses at mid-year, et cetera, like that. I'm trying to find the quote right here to read it to you, but there was one line that I thought that's kind of cryptic. Let me see if I can find it here.
I've got the press. I've got the transcript someplace too, if you need it. But
I've got the transcript in front of me. But he was asked a question about, you know, you've been there before when you've had to make some changes at mid-year, et cetera, like that. And he kind of makes this comment that says, you know, we've done this before.
Yeah. Meaning Louisiana. You know,
he's talking about being in Louisiana. He said, we have done this before. Mm-hmm. That was almost cryptic to say, you know, he was kind of answering a question about making wholesale changes. And he wasn't going to come right out and say it, when you say something like that, it lends itself to make you believe that, that's kind of what he actually is implying there. I've been told by some people, and I think they know what they're talking about, that last week, a lot of players were told, you better buckle your seatbelt, you better start getting it, or else somebody else is going to be on the field and not you. I think my source on that's pretty reliable. And so I wouldn't be surprised to see numerous players in there that we haven't seen much of this year, or that maybe have been relegated to backup roles against Georgia. And I think it's at that point in time, kind of the way it was in Louisiana when he was 3-4 at just after the mid-year point, and he had just lost to Appalachian State. And they made a lot of changes in that lineup. And from that point on, they started winning ball games. They won 4 of their next 5. And people in Lafayette were about to ask the question, why did we get rid of Coach Hudspeth when this guy's coming in here and all he's doing is losing? We could have lost just as well with the other guy. And then they started winning. And they started winning because basically they started implementing some changes. Yeah. I think we're going to see that. I don't know how much good it will do against Georgia. I really don't, because I don't know that Georgia is the best team in the country, but they may be the best coach team in the country, particularly on the defensive side of the football, because when you can play people straight up and you don't have to rush, you don't have to blitz, and you can drop 7 into coverage on every single play, I'm telling you what, it makes it really, really hard for an offense to get any kind of traction.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a tough ball game.
All right, so here's the deal. France is coming to you in what was the green room, now is orange and blue room, sponsored by a good friend over at Main Street Community Bank of Ocala, independent FDIC insured, locally operated, full-service bank offering a broad range of financial services. Come down and see our new office in North Magnolia, Main Street Community Bank of Ocala. Community is our middle name. Sponsor of the Orange and Blue Room, where Franz Beard is right now. And Franz, we have lots of questions about basketball and scrimmage. I'm just going to let you finish up this program, talk about all those things. People are asking, what does it look like? Who looks good? So it's basketball is coming around the corner. So it's all yours. Take it away, Franz.
The basketball team is going to be vastly improved this year. Colin Castleton coming back was huge. Getting Kyle Lofton as the point guard, also huge, because now you've got the point guard that you haven't had basically since Chioza was here. Answer to John Brock, I heard things about the scrimmage, but we were not allowed to be in there. NCAA rules will not allow any media in for a scrimmage like that. I don't know why, but that's the rule. I do know that the scrimmage went well. I know that they're happy with Kyle Lofton. They're very, very happy with Castleton in there. They believe that they have a lot of interchangeable parts. They're not afraid to play Trey Bonham and Lofton together at times. They're not afraid to play Jatobo and Castleton at times. They can surround Castleton with 4 guards and play that way. They can go big if they need to play Castleton and, for example, Felder, and then play Alex Fudge as the small forward at 6'9", 6'10". You've got some real options there that they haven't had before. And you got a coach that's not afraid to interchange his players. Watching practice today, I was amazed at how they can interchange the players and how they work the players in each of the practice drills. They're running plays and they're running this play over and over again, but you're watching how the ball moves quickly. And buddy, you know that you've heard that old saying for the years that the ball moves faster than your feet. Well, they're emphasizing quick, fast ball movement. Get the defense out of position. Fast cuts. People who know where they're going in a hurry with a ball moving fast is going to create a lot of mismatch and wide open situations for shooters, for drivers, etc. like that. I'm impressed with what I've seen. I think this is going to be a very well-coached team. I hate to bash the previous coach because he was a good guy. Mike White's a very fine person, and I hope he finds some success wherever he is from here on out. Although I'm very disappointed in where he went this time. But these people get it when it comes to offensive basketball, and we haven't seen that in a long time. Under the previous coach, we were used to those 5, 6, 7 minute lulls when the ball wouldn't go in the basket and the ball didn't move. You don't see people just standing around flat-footed. You see people moving constantly. And the ball moves and people move. And when that happens, defenses get caught in the lurch and the offense gets opportunities. I think people are going to have fun watching them. I haven't seen enough of the defense to really tell you how much improved they're going to be, but I believe they're going to be because I think they have superior quickness and they've got a guy like Fudge who's a tremendous eraser. C.J. Felder, who was injured a lot last year, he's far, far better than what anybody remembers from last year because last year he was playing with a sports hernia and he couldn't jump, couldn't do a lot of things. But he's a great shot blocker and he's a very physical guy on the inside. So you got guys like that. Jatobo, as long as he isn't driving a car, everybody loves him. And I got to throw him one other thing. Today at practice, Jason Jatobo was coming back from an appointment with his eye surgeon. I think he's going to have one more surgery. But everything is progressing so well with his recovery very, very difficult eye surgery. I wrote about it last week in the magazine. And I'm watching these guys running through drills, and there's a lot of dunks going up. This guy is standing in the end zone, and the most encouraging basketball player I've seen at Florida in years. Encouraging everybody. I mean, you can tell why this guy is so loved as a teammate and why he is so valuable. And Carlin Hartman, associate head coach, even said, this guy is valuable as a teammate. And you can tell why. But he's not the only one. There's a lot of encouragement I see going on with this team. I see a team that, to have so many new guys, they have really bonded well together. There's not any lack of chemistry with these guys. And you can tell that the chemistry extends with the coaching staff. They love the coaches. They had Mike Eads, the SEC, one of the top officials in the SEC. He's called four Final Fours. They had him in today talking about how the rules changes affect them, et cetera, like that. Very attentive group. Watching Kevin Hovde when he comes in there, and directs the offense. He is the offensive coordinator. And, you know, we talked about Mike needing that for years, that he needed an offensive coordinator. If he'd had this guy, they'd have won a lot more ball games. This guy really, really has good schemes. And you watch him. Buddy, you watch these guys, Todd Golden, Kevin Hovde, Carlin Hartman, Corey McRae. When they talk, they don't have to repeat it over and over again. It's coming in, it's like, bang, bang, bang. This, we're going to do this, 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 and this. And then you watch the guys do it. It's really a remarkable sight to see that kind of attentiveness and that kind of focus at practice. Obviously, you don't get it if the coach doesn't demand it, and the coaches demand it. I'm really liking what I'm seeing. Question here is, has 13 games for January 1, will they have more wins than the football team in the fiscal year 2022? Yes.
There you go. France, good stuff as always. You're kind of making it sound like it's going to be a good year for basketball and fun to watch this team grow and build, and another head coach we're breaking in. So that's what we do, Francis. Great stuff as always. You've been lighting it up on Gator Bait. We're undergoing some changes, all for the better. And we think you're going to love what the end product's going to be. We got some great people working with us. Francis carrying the torch, as usual. Check him out tomorrow. Check out his column regularly. You never know. He may write every day for the next 3 weeks. He just pops up. There it is. Franz Beard, thoughts of the day. So keep up the good work, my man.
Appreciate it. Let me throw in one other quick thing about Todd Golden. This guy said 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, he said, this is an NCAA tournament team.
Yeah,
said this.
He did.
And I've been watching them. I've seen probably 80% of their practices that they've held open to the public, to the media. And from what I've seen, yeah, I would say that. They're definitely a better team than they were last year, for sure.
Franz Beard, read all about it. Listen to him on the program. Catch up to you later in the week, Francis. It's Florida Georgia week. It's when you get fired up. Let's hear it. Bring it on.
Just right. Kick the poodle's butts.
There you go. Thank you, Franz Beard. Appreciate it, buddy. Thanks. All right, well, thank our friends over at RedStar Medical Research, who've been so supportive of us all these years and doing a great job in our community as a stakeholder in downtown. They are always looking out for a better treatment, medical treatment for us, trying to find the proper treatment for things that are indigenous to our area. And they have a lot of clinical trials going on, and you pay attention, you might be able to catch one, be a part participant in one. You got to go to their website, redstar.net, and check out their schedule, what they've got going on, and what it entails. Now, they're a patient-centered clinical research facility. They bring cutting-edge clinical research trials to Ocala in areas like Alzheimer's and psoriasis, osteoarthritis, migraines, fibromyalgia, along with many other conditions that affect our community right here. So, since their inception in 1998, RedStar has participated in more than 700 clinical trials and continues to partner with prominent pharmaceutical and biomedical companies. So you can go online and check them out at redstar.net and find out if you qualify for one of the clinical trials and take part in it. So check them out. RedStar Medical Research, seeking tomorrow's answers to the health questions of today. Good show tonight. Our thanks to, of course, the QB himself, Shane Matthews. Chris Doring joins us for a segment. Of course, it's the Iron Duke. He's always bringing it. He does twice a week here on the program. Tomorrow night, we'll have David Whitley and the team back, Lauren Meadows, whatever. It's going to be a good week. Tune in to the show. Thanks for listening, and thanks for watching, and thanks to our sponsors for making this possible. Be sure and support them, too. Good night, everybody.